You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, and welcome to the Write Club podcast, where we take you behind the pages and into the fascinating world of writing. I'm Mary, and this is Beth, and we're part of the team at Writing Magazine and Writers Online. Hi, Beth, how are you?
Hi, yeah, really good today, thanks. And I'm really excited to introduce our guest this week. Matt Ulridge is a screenwriter, producer, and a best-selling novelist. He's worked in television for the last 20 years, specialising in high-end drama production, including primetime crime serials, Silent Witness, Torn, The Little House, and most recently, the hit ITV show Innocent. In 2015, his audiobook exclusive 6 Degrees of Assassination was a number one bestseller featuring the acting talents of Andrew Scott. His debut thriller, Eeny Meeny, was the UK's best-selling crime debut of 2014 and has been followed by 12 more DI Helen Grace thrillers, almost all Sunday Times bestsellers, which is an incredible achievement. He's sold over 1.5 million copies of his books in the UK alone and been translated into over 20 languages. His newest novel, Into the Fire, is a great entry book into the series as the protagonist has left the police force to turn maverick investigator, perfect for readers who may be new to the series. Matt, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited.
Brilliant. And where are you joining us from today?
So I live in sunny Hertfordshire, which is not very sunny this morning. I've lived here for, you know, from London originally, but lived here for sort of the last 17 years. We moved here and our first child arrived about 10 days after we moved. So it was a baptism of fire. And this is where we've raised the kids and where I've written most of my books.
Oh, so are you in your writing space this morning?
I am. When we moved into our house, we did quite a lot of work on it and we converted the loft, and the loft is my little den, my writing space, because I sort of find that, because we've got two kids and a dog and various other things, and I find it's quite handy and quite healthy to be able to just climb to the top of the house, shut what is quite a heavy fire door so that the dog can't sort of barrel in at any point, and then you just sort of have that moment of peace and quiet as you sort of sit down with your coffee at the beginning of the day and just settle in for a day of murder and mayhem.
Could you tell us a little bit about the new book, Into the Fire?
Yeah, so it's the 13th book in the D.I. Helen Grace series, and the series is set in and around Southampton, because even though you might not know this, there are huge amounts of serial killers running around on the South Coast who need to be pursued through the New Forest and various other places and to be caught. And Helen is a sort of all-action, kick-ass female DI who rides a Kawasaki and is endlessly sort of throwing her body into the line of danger. And but at the end of the previous book, Forget Me Not, she resigned from Hampshire Police on a point of principle. So when we meet her in Into the Fire in the 13th book, she is no longer a police officer. And for those who've read the series, I'll know that she joined very young, and it's pretty much her whole identity is being a police officer. So she finds herself in a very strange place, and she's trying to sort of embrace her new life and chart a new path for herself. But then in the opening sequence, she spots a crime being committed, an attempted abduction, and has to get involved. And from then on, we follow her story as she tries to rescue an abducted woman from death, with none of the resources that she usually can call on. She has to do it solo in the teeth of opposition from her previous colleagues. And so it's kind of quite a fun book, this one, because Helen has to sort of go it alone. On the one hand, that's very difficult for her. But on the other hand, it frees her from all the sort of constraints of being a police officer, so she can go quite wild in her pursuit of justice. And Helen's always quite a wild character, but definitely more so in this book.
Sounds brilliant. And what is it about writing thrillers that you enjoy?
Well, I always sort of think, you know, you should write a book that you would like to read yourself. And, you know, I'm an extremely old man, so I remember sort of back when we used to have video stores, and when I'd go into Blockbuster, I would always bypass the romance or probably the comedy sections too, and just go straight for the sort of crime and thriller, sort of, you know, whether it was Seven or Speed or Goodfellas or whatever. I like the sort of darker stuff that really got the sort of pulse racing. And I think with my book choices too, you know, I'm a big fan of Thomas Harris, for example, who wrote Silence of the Lambs and Red Dragon. And, you know, I love those things that pitch you into a really dark world and just, as I say, get the adrenaline going. So for me, that's what I've tried to do when writing the Helen Grace books. And for me, narrative speed is kind of really crucial. I think with thrillers, you've got to move at serious pace to sort of, you know, make them unputdownable. And I think what a lot of people like about the Helen Grace thrillers is they have very short chapters, which means, you know, you just keep turning the page, you know, and people, I think, often read the book in a day or 2 days and, you know, spend the weekend just ignoring their family and forgetting about the housework and all that sort of stuff. And that's sort of what I'm aiming for, is just to try and make them sort of unputdownable.
Yeah, that's my favourite thing when I'm reading, is if the chapters are really short, I will just keep going. I'm like, it's okay, just one more chapter, because it's only like going to take a couple minutes. And especially if I'm reading it on my Kindle, it will tell me how many minutes I have left in the chapter. And if it's 20 minutes, I'm not starting it, because I know I'm not going to stay awake if I'm reading it in bed. I will be asleep before the end of that 20 minutes. But if it's just 3 or 4 minutes, I'll read one, and then yeah, the next chapter will be a few minutes and I'll read that, and I'll end up reading for 20 minutes as well.
Well, that's the idea. And I think it also helped that when I started writing, our kids were really small, so sort of 1 and 3, you know, so we were shattered, you know, and I think I sort of felt that if at the end of the day, in lying in bed, you had a chance to read one chapter, sort of just one little moment of adult time, you know, nothing to do with the kids, then you'd sort of felt you'd won. Mm. And I think having chapters that were sort of 2 or 3 pages long was ideal. And it's not a very British style, that we tend to sort of have a slightly slower pace and major more on character and atmosphere. And I was quite intrigued early on in my sort of crime writing career. I was reading Harlan Coben and James Patterson, and they love their short chapters. And, you know, James Patterson, some of his chapters in the Alex Cross books are like one page. Oh, this is brilliant. You know, you can, and as a writer, you can say, I've achieved something. I've written a chapter. It's like one page, you know. And so I do like that sort of very short, quite sort of kind of curt action with always hopefully a zinger line at the end that just means you can't stop now. You've got to keep going.
You actually read more, don't you? And I find I read more when it's really fast paced like that.
Definitely. No, I think, you know, it's just, I think our attention spans are shorter now. And I think in a long chapter, your mind tends to wonder about sort of the food shop and whatever else, you know, whereas I think the short hooky chapters are really great, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely love Harlan Coben books and James Patterson. That's most of my bookshelf.
Yeah, great. Good choice.
So yes. That, and obviously one of the authors that's really, really popular at the minute is Freida McFadden, and she writes in a very similar way, in that some of her chapters are only a couple of pages, and it's really taken off, because like you say, people have such short attention spans now that when you're reading short chapters, you feel like you could just keep reading.
Yeah, no, I think, well, I just think, you know, people's, you know, tastes change, you know, and novels change with it. And that's, you know, that's the way it has to be, I think, to keep people reading.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously there must be a lot of research involved before you begin writing, especially because you're using different police procedural stories. How do you go about doing this? And do you talk with any police officers? How do you go about doing your research?
Well, the research I do is sort of less procedural, really, because even though I, you know, the Helen Grace books obviously follow police officers and all the rest of it, you know, I think a real procedural is about the sort of tiny detail. So I used to write for Silent Witness, and that sort of, you know, that's really about how this tiny little detail of something under the fingernails leads to this, you know, and it's very painstaking, and that's like a sort of proper procedural where you're really embracing the sort of minutiae of detective work. I think if you're writing thrillers, it's slightly different. You know, in thrillers, in Forget Me Not, the previous one, and in Into the Fire, this one, you know, the ticking clock is the most important thing. And it's like, okay, someone's life is in danger. How do I save it? You know, and it's much more about the sort of breathless. So I think Helen sort of plays sort of quite fast and loose with procedure. So I don't dwell on that. The research I tend to do is much more about the victims and the antagonist, trying to get the psychology of, you know, why someone would keep a head in a fridge, or, you know, something like that. For me, that's sort of a lot of the interesting stuff. And often, I mean, I think the research just changes the book. Actually, you discover what the story is sometimes while you're researching. So the classic one was, the sixth book is called Hide and Seek, and Helen's actually in prison at that point. She's been framed for a crime, and she's actually in a women's prison in Holloway Prison, just as it's about to shut down. It's sort of crumbling Gothic sort of monstrosity. And there's a serial killer in the prison who's basically killing the prisoners, sort of. So it's, imagine being locked in a prison with a serial killer, which I always thought was a great sort of fun idea. And I started researching that, and I thought it was going to be like this really gothic tale of people running down corridors and getting trapped against the bars and the serials, you know. So it's quite gothic. But then I started reading about kind of women in prison and realized that actually there's a much more interesting story, because women still, you know, in this day and age, are more likely to be the primary caregiver. So if you imprison a woman, it has a massive effect on the wider family and all of that sort of stuff. And so then really reading about that and understanding how it was different in a way to banging up men, I sort of, the whole story changed, and it became much more about family, basically. That became the key theme of the book. And that was a sort of really good example of how research suddenly can sort of twist the story and take you off in a completely new direction. And hopefully, just through, really, because truth is sort of stranger and often more interesting than fiction, it gives it sort of extra layers, I think, once you start to sort of dig down a little deeper. So I think my like a lot of crime writers, my sort of search history is pretty bleak and pretty dark and fairly suspicious, because I do like to kind of go into the psychology of why people commit these monstrous crimes.
Do you think your background in television writing affects the way you write? Just then, I could imagine that you saw it as a scene straight away, and then the research changed it.
Yeah, completely. No, I mean, I think absolutely. I think when Eeny Meeny, which was the first Helen Grace book, was published, someone said it's like a screenplay in prose form. And that's, you know, that's what I think is, I mean, you read other more accomplished writers, and their sort of novel, sorry, their chapters can span days or months or different, you know, whereas mine, it's really just one scene. It's one action, and a bit like a classic movie scene. You come in and into the action as late as possible and leave as early as you can, just to really get the sort of juice of it. And that's sort of how I do it. I sort of, each chapter, something physical happens, something, they're generally not internal ruminations. They're an action, they're a chase, they're something. So that's exactly how I do it. And I think it's interesting, my first job back in the late 90s was on EastEnders, you know, and I was having to work with writers structuring their episodes for that, their 28-minute episodes. And, you know, there you had lots of different characters, lots of different families in Albert Square, all interweaving, but all leading to some sort of cliffhanger. And I think those skills of interweaving narratives and building to some sort of crescendo, I mean, I think, you know, 25 plus years later, those are exactly the skills that I'm using in writing a book, really. So I still don't know how to write a novel, but I'm giving it my best shot.
Can you tell us how you got into writing for television? That sounds fascinating.
Well, I did. So I studied English literature at university. Then I went to film school, and it was quite funny that all the people at all the film students were like desperate to make these arty sort of black and white films that nobody would see. And I was like, I sort of quite fancied television because the numbers were sort of bigger. And I remember there was a guy who came to talk to us who'd been working for sort of London's Burning and other sort of ITV sort of staples, The Bill and so forth. And he said that we should just target the soaps, because the people working on the soaps, the producers, script editors and stuff, they work so hard that they usually burn out after 18 months. So there's always vacancies. So, and I didn't really know Corey or Brookside that well, but I knew EastEnders. So I thought, well, I will do that. So I kept knocking on the door and they sort of rejected me the first couple of times because I wasn't sort of experienced enough. And eventually they let me in, and I was sort of 22 at the time, and I was there was a whole script team, but the real sort of brains was the story lining team, who had to plot all the stories 6, 7, 8, and 9 months in advance. And there was a chief storyliner who did the big ones, and then his deputy, and then it got down to me. I was the fourth one, and I did the stories for the kids, for Sonia Jackson and Wellard the dog, and all these sort of tiny little characters that pretty much always dropped out because people, we'll forget that, you know. But it was enormously good fun being in a room where they're plotting months and months ahead, and you realise how long these stories have to run for, and how you build, you know. I mean, that's the great joy of soap, is you can build a story over 6 months, a year, 5 years, you know, if it's a character who is, and that's why it has its sort of emotional power and dramatic impact. And that was, I mean, I still think, yeah, I mean, it was a sort of strange place to work because it was chaotic and everyone was always stabbing each other in the back, and it was quite weird, but it was such a sort of fierce education in narrative and how to tell a story. And it was great at parties because all my friends were doing sort of really boring law conversion courses, and I can say I was storylining EastEnders. So it's, it got me a little cachet when I was young.
Were you doing your own writing at the same time? Or did that come?
A little bit, but I mean, I think it's interesting that my mum cleared out her house recently and found a certificate from when I was 8 for W.H. Smith's sort of writing competition. So I obviously have been writing from a young age, and all my friends say that's sort of what I wanted to do. But it's sort of quite exposing saying I'm a writer, you know, and offering a book, or, you know, because you sort of think people will be bored or they'll laugh or whatever it may be. And it is quite exposing. So I think a lot of people who want to be writers or have that creative urge, they sort of often go and work in the arts, but maybe in a commissioning job or a producing job where you're sort of around creativity, but you're not putting yourself front and center. And so I sort of did that for a long time. But then as I was sort of reaching my kind of late 30s, sort of with 40 knocking on the door, I felt, you know, I've got to do this sort of now or never. So Eeny Meeny was my midlife crisis, really. But it was, you know, and I did it because I wasn't known in publishing. I was a TV person. But I thought maybe if I write a book, if it fails, you know, nobody knows me in that industry, so it won't matter. I won't humiliate myself. But happily, you know, it was I got an agent and then a publisher, and it took off. And yeah, the sort of rest is history, really.
Oh, amazing. And when you sit down to write, do you start with like the characters, the world, or the plot? How do you go about actually coming up with your initial concept?
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of different for everyone, isn't it? I mean, I think because I'm writing a series, that's a great joy because the characters are established. There's Helen and her sidekick Charlie and all the rest of it. So you know what you're dealing with, you know your world. So for me, the concept, you know, the idea behind this is key, whether it's a particular...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Baddie I've thought of, or in this case, Helen just being sort of utterly powerless and trying to sort of dig into that, really. So I sort of come up with a concept, a theme, and then I build from there. And I think a lot of writers, novelists sort of just find their way. They just write and find their way into the book. And I'm not that at all. You know, I work out what my story is, and I kind of almost start at the end, because I think, you know, the ending is the most important thing, not only in the sense that it should be the most exciting, the sort of climax, but it also should make sense of everything that's gone before. So for me, the ending is the key thing. So I find that, and then I work backwards, and I basically plot out every chapter of every book every chapter in the book before I start writing. And I normally do a treatment of about 10 to 15,000 words, and then discuss that with my editor and we pull bits out, and you know, and so it means you don't have to write chapters that are eventually redundant. So, and I just think for me that's the most important thing, because I think being able to write prose and write characters is one thing, but actually, have you got a good story? Does it have a good beginning, middle, and end? Are there any characters that actually you could just jettison because they're just padding, you know? So I really try and be quite forensic, and then when I write, I can write really quickly because I know exactly what's happening, and I write sort of, you know, 5-6 chapters a day, so about 5,000 words, whatever. So I can go very fast once I've got the plan. And I think, I don't say, so I don't think everyone does that, but for me it really works, because I just think you've got to be sure that the story is really good before you actually start writing it.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. I think you're probably the first author that we've spoken to on this that works like that, and I feel like it just makes sense.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people get bored and they just want to get cracking, you know, which is totally understandable. But I think in my previous existence as a TV producer and developing shows for TV, I read quite a lot of crime books where I felt that the author perhaps didn't know the story when they started, you know, so the ending was a bit dissatisfying. And you sort of think, often they have like a great opening scene or a brilliant character, but actually the ending is the key, you know, and I think that's really got to be satisfying on every level. And if it isn't, then you need to think again, basically. In Grace series, it's kind of better if you can read them in order, just because obviously Helen's and Charlie's sort of serial journey is sort of older and more, and I think you get more from it if you do, but they are designed to be standalone in the sense that you can enjoy the narrative just in one book. And I think that's particularly the case in Into the Fire, because she is, as I said, she's in a new space, Helen, and I think, and I mean, it's kind of a, I really love writing this book because professionally and personally, you know, I take her to places that she's really never been before, and there's some quite big shocks in there that will surprise regular readers, but hopefully will intrigue new readers too. So they're all designed to be able to be read as standalones if that's what you want.
Oh, perfect. Because I was, as you were talking, I just looked behind me on my bookshelf and I've got Forget Me Not on there.
Okay.
I was like, I better pick that one up so I can, because it's,
yeah, you should,
right up my street. But then I saw it was book 12 of the series and I thought, oh dear.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, it'll make sense. And I think Forget Me Not leads very directly into the fire. So it's sort of, it will be a good introduction to the one that's about to come out.
Amazing. I will be picking that up as soon as we end this call. And what does a typical writing day look like for you?
Well, it depends really. I mean, I think it's, so I've got a cockapoo called Jack, who is sort of quite boisterous, and so we go out in the morning. That's the start, you know. And normally my posts on social media are either about me writing or about Jack. You know, he's the sort of star of the show. So yeah, we'll get out, and we live on the edge of St Albans in Hertfordshire. So I can see right now, looking out from my window, I can see the rolling hills in the distance. So we like to get out, have a charge around, and then come back and settle down. And then I'm really quite sort of I don't know, strict with myself, you know. I try and start writing around 9:30, and you know, write until 1, have a little break, and then carry on. And you know, normally sort of the kids kind of come back in around sort of 4, and that's sort of when the chaos starts, because there's always some sort of brewing emergency or something that's, or some club that, you know. And I do like the way that writing lifestyle works, that you can, you know, get your chapters down, you can really switch off and immerse yourself in a sort of strange fantasy world. But then, you know, life sort of pulls you out of it sort of later on, and you get involved with the kids and everything else. And I like that, actually, because it's just, I'm quite a sort of homebody. So I quite like being around when everyone comes home and finding out what's going on. And my daughter will give me extravagantly long readouts of her day, and my son will say fine and sort of walk off, you know. And so it's that sort of classic gender difference of oversharing and undersharing that you're just sort of that we're navigating, but it's great, and I like that because it just means that I can then switch off at the end of the day and not think about killing people, and you know, that's good.
And what advice would you give to any writers wanting to break into the thriller genre?
Well, I think, you know, the most obvious one is, people say write what you know, which I think is only true to an extent. I think write what you would like to read, I think, is the most important stuff, because that in a way just do something that you think is really exciting and interesting and surprising and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I think you also have to be slightly canny and have an eye to the market, in the sense of, if you want to get published, what would an agent, what would a publisher be looking for? Well, probably a series, if you can, you know, if you've got one in you, because obviously, so when I went to Penguin, to talk, discuss Eeny Meeny with them. I pitched them the first 8 books in the series because I had so many sort of ideas. I said, and then this happens, and then this happens. And of course, we didn't end up doing all of those, but it gave Penguin the idea that this really had legs, that I was ambitious for it, and that I thought Helen could really, you know, and obviously for them, that you know, a series, you know, finding your next sort of Rebus or Jack Reacher or Thorn or whoever, you know, that's the sort of golden goose for them. So I think just be aware what's out there. And then I think for me, just make sure you've got a good story before you start, because I think it does actually make it easier and more enjoyable when you know your spine, you know where you're going, and then you can divert, you can have a bit of fun along the way, but you know, but always that central premise is in your head of where you're going. And I think just make sure you don't rush at it, because it'll actually make it quicker in the long term if you really do your planning first.
That's lovely. And that covers, you know, what mistakes to avoid as well. I think you talked about that earlier with the having the clear ending and knowing where you're going. So.
Yeah, definitely. It depends what sort of book you want to write as well. I mean, when I first started Eeny Meeny, I wrote it in the first person. So I did this, and I hated it. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't get away from Helen. I was stuck. So then I wrote it in the third person. That was great, because then suddenly Helen was doing her thing. But also we were picking up what the killer was doing. And then we found the next victim, even though they didn't know they were about to be the victim. And then we picked up Charlie. And actually just being able to interweave all those different points of view generated real pace, real variety, real energy into it. And I thought, OK. And so I sort of vowed never to write in the first person ever again, because I hated it so much. And I think in a thriller, particularly a sort of a tense, fast moving one, having those multi POVs is exciting, but also fun, because you've just got all those different characters to deploy.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just finished reading Perfect Remains. I don't know if you've read that, but
no, I haven't yet. Yeah,
it's a great book, and that's very similar in that it's written from the detective's perspective, as well as the serial killer and the kidnapper. Right. So that was really, it was a really fascinating read, and it kept you hooked because you knew who the killer was, but the detective didn't. So you knew more than what he did.
Nice.
It just kept me, I was like, come on, he's getting so close. And then as soon as he got close, the serial killer would do something to throw him off course. And you're just getting, it makes you frustrated because you just want him to find out who the killer is and save all of these women that he's kidnapped. But at the same time, you're just waiting for things to happen. And as much as it's frustrating, it also keeps you reading, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. You want to see it resolved, right? Yeah, sounds brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. Great book. Fully recommend it. Would you be able to give us a sneak peek into what you're working on next?
So I've recently done a series of co-written books where I come up with the story and the title and the lead characters, and then I develop them with other authors. And I've done 5 of those with Julia Crouch, Steph Broadrib, Lisa Hall, Andy Maslin, and Alex Kahn. And so I'm just finishing the last one of those with Alex, which is called The Last Rites, which is a serial killer story set up in sunny Burnley. So that's exciting. And so that's been really good fun. So I'm just finishing the last of that. And then I'm literally just before I spoke to you, I was writing the next Helen Grace book that comes after Into the Fire, and that's called Out of the Ashes. And that's, again, it directly picks up on the ending of Into the Fire, and that's entirely set in Holland, in the port city of Rotterdam, which is the entry point for pretty much all cocaine that comes into Europe. And because of the events in Into the Fire, she heads off to Holland. And so again, Helen, it's another sort of story where Helen's out of her comfort zone in a place where the cops carry guns, and she, you know, she can't understand any of the street names, and she's chasing somebody around. And it's, again, it's just a sort of fun way. So I keep, you know, even though there are lots of elements in terms of the pace, the action, the tension that you get in every Helen Grace book, you know, I always try and shake things up. So, you know, it never feels like a formula, that Helen's always doing something new or it is somewhere new. And that was great because I had a lot of, research going to Rotterdam and exploring that interesting place. So, yeah, and that's the great joy of this kind of stuff, is when you get to do a little bit of research and get to sneak off on a foreign trip for a little bit. So
sounds like a perfect opportunity to get away for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely. And on that then, how do you actually come up with all these different ideas? Obviously, like, you've got 13 books in this series. How do you keep them fresh?
I don't know, really. I mean, it's just, I think it's so good example was last night where for some reason, I don't know why, I woke up at like 4 a.m. and between 4 a.m. and 5 a.m. when I was lying there, I had two new ideas for books. Just sort of like, I thought, oh, that's unpleasant. That's interesting. You know, and you just sort of, I think somehow when you're freed up from the normal noise of life, you know, there's no phones, there's no, you know, you're just lying in the darkness. I think a lot of the weird ideas, and I think that I find that the ideas often come when you've just switched off your brain. Like if you're just sort of wandering up the supermarket aisle in a daze, or you're in the shower or whatever, and it just, I think suddenly that's when your brain starts to sort of sift, and something you've read or something someone said to you just sort of pings, and you go. And I think, so I don't really know where they come from, but I think all that's important is that I always want to contrast each book. So for example, the third book, Doll's House, was very claustrophobic about being abducted and trapped in a place. So the next book, the fourth one, Liar Liar, was quite epic. It was about fires and multiple fires. But you know, and so I just try each time and freshen the mix and just, but I just think, you know, you know as a crime writer when you've hit upon the kernel of an idea, which is just taps into one of our primal fears or just makes us feel a little bit uneasy. And I think that sort of, that's when my mind starts to sort of scroll and I sort of see the whole story like in one sort of flash. And then it's just a question of, can you write it all down before you forget it all? You know, and that's the, that's the key thing.
I think that's quite a common issue that we found with a lot of the authors that we've spoken to, and that they write it in their head, and then when it comes onto the page, they either have forgotten half of it or half of it's changed, and they're trying to work out what the story is actually going to be.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I think, you know, the next step on from voice recognition dictation is sort of thought. Well, if you could just think it and it would be written down, that would be great, because that's your hands often can't quite keep up with your brain, and that's the problem, you know.
Yeah, someone needs to invent
Yeah,
that.
it's on its way, I'm sure.
And we always end by asking for a book recommendation. Is there a novel that you've read recently that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, so I think I recently did an event with CM Ewan, Chris Ewan, who writes very tense claustrophobic thrillers. And I've just read his latest, Strangers in a Car, which is about a young couple who are sort of in the midst of sort of almost breaking up their relationship. And they're driving home from Foy in Cornwall through thick fog. And they pass a guy, almost run him over on a country lane because the fog's so bad. But they decide to press on. And then they pull past a lay-by where a woman with a baby is standing, and the car's obviously broken down. And so they and ah, but then they decide to pull up and decide to give these pair a lift. Big mistake. And from there on in, and Chris sort of writes these things where you're just stuck somewhere. So these four are stuck in a car together. He's done another good one previously where a woman was trying to sell a house and the agent couldn't come. So the buyer just turned up on their own and then refused to leave, and you're just sort of stuck in his house. And he writes these sort of incredibly sort of scary sort of claustrophobic thrillers, and I really enjoyed Strangers in a Car because it is absolute page turner, and it's got a couple of really monster twists that you don't see coming. And I think even though it's sort of strangely uncomfortable reading the book and sort of being looked trapped in this car, you sort of still got to carry on just to find out what happens, you know. So that would be my recommendation, Strangers in a Car. See.
Brilliant. I'll add that to my list as well.
Great.
Much too scary for me.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
Well, thank you so much, Matt. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank
No,
you.
it's brilliant. We could listen to your stories and listen to your talk for another couple hours, I think.
Oh, well, we'll do it again.
Yeah, brilliant. That sounds great.
Thanks for tuning into the Write Club. We hope you enjoyed this episode and feel inspired to keep writing. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at Writers Online, your go-to for writing tips, competitions, and exclusive updates. Plus, you'll never miss an episode of the Write Club. Until next time, happy writing.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.